Hi, it's Gillian here from Irish Funds. Today we are bringing you the next episode in our series of recordings from the Irish Funds 10th Annual UK Symposium, which took place on November 30th in London. This episode features a panel discussion entitled Practical Applications of Artificial Intelligence in the Funds Industry, which was moderated by Barry Scannell of William Fry and includes Maria Knight of Goldman Sachs, Shani Venon of BNP Paribas, and Jack White of Citi. The panel discusses the latest trends with AI in the funds industry and the practical applications of the technology, alongside some live interaction with ChatGPT. We hope you enjoy this episode and be sure to keep an eye out for further podcasts on the UK Symposium coming soon.
Hi everybody, my name is Barry Scannell. I'm a solicitor in William Fry, an Irish law firm in Dublin, and I'm from the technology group in William Fry, and I specialise in AI. While I was listening to Baroness Fluella, for whatever reason, I thought that there was actually going to be another speaker between the panel and Baroness Fluella, and I was thinking, thank God I'm not having to follow that up. AI is very much the buzzword, and it's an area of huge interest, but it's also an area that's really, really taking off and really important. Certainly on the legal side of things, we're seeing a huge amount being done. Now, before I introduce the panelists, David Shirley asked me when we were organizing this event at this panel, would I be able to incorporate ChatGPT into the panel in some way? And I said, we could. Whether or not it's a good idea, I don't know, but I said we'd give it a try. So with that, we'll try and see, can we help get ChatGPT's help to introduce the audience. So now I'm actually talking to ChatGPT, and we are live in front of hundreds of people, so I was wondering, would you like to say hello and introduce yourself, please?
I'm ChatGPT, an AI developed by OpenAI.
Great. Now, you realize you're at the panel helping me to introduce our panelists. Would you mind just going through our panelists and introducing them for everyone, please? This worked better in my head.
Certainly, it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished panelists. First, we welcome Jack White, Vice President of Data, Digital, and Innovation at Citi Securities Services. Jack's exceptional 14-year journey in the investment industry has seen him spearheading Citi's strategy in innovation and client engagement, with a notable focus on blockchain technology and digital transformation. His expertise is further enriched by his prior roles leading blockchain solutions at FNZ, and consulting for top fintech companies. Next, we have Maria Knight, leading the business intelligence and automation at Goldman Sachs Asset Management. Maria has been instrumental in enhancing process efficiency, risk identification, cost reduction, and ensuring high quality service since joining GS in October 2013. Her innovative approach includes the integration of analytics and training in low and no code AI tools. Her extensive experience as a management consultant has been pivotal in her successful delivery of several commercial and industrialization initiatives in asset and wealth management. Lastly, I'm delighted to introduce Shani Venon. With over two decades of experience in securities services, Shani has held various global positions in fund product management and asset manager business development. In her notable role as head of asset owners and managers, client lines for France and Belgium in 2017, and currently as head of institutional investors client lines for Luxembourg, Ireland, and the Channel Islands at BNP Paribas, Shani is a key figure in developing value propositions and market strategies. Her membership on the BNP Paribas Luxembourg branch's Security Services Executive Committee highlights her significant contribution to the industry. These esteemed panelists bring a wealth of knowledge and experience to today's discussion on AI.
Great. And before I put you back in my pocket and out of my life, would you like to say anything else?
Thank you for including me in this panel. It's been a pleasure to assist.
ChatGPT, everybody. And, you know, we said it might be a gimmick, but thankfully it wasn't remotely. But to get the panel to kick off, you know, we've been seeing, certainly in the legal industry, and I'm sure for yourselves as well, the financial services sector is light years ahead of other industries when it comes to AI. And I suppose a lot of that reason is because AI has been around, and funds in particular, for such a long time, with predictive AI going back. And Maria, I'd just like to ask you, you know, why do you think the funds industry is so embedded with AI? And, you know, could you talk a little bit about the predictive AI and generative AI type of framework?
I think before I get into that, I'm just pleased that ChatGPT wasn't trained off my Facebook profile, because I think it would have been a bit different. so, phew, thanks for that. And just as a sense, like Baroness, the Baroness was graduated, my Chancellor of Exeter University when I graduated 16 years ago, so she gave me my my degree, so thanks. Nice to see you again. It must be, I don't think she's out there, but she must be. But yeah, it's nice to see history repeat it, in meeting with her today, so that's just fantastic to have such a great speaker. So yeah, talk about starting with a complicated question. Thanks for that. Look, predictive AI, generative AI, as I summarise it, predictive AI boils down to machine learning, so keeping it kind of simple as I can, that's all about predictions and classification. In the funds industry, at least as I've seen it, and some of you might be surprised to know this, I think machine learning is in play. Funds industry perhaps isn't the most, new area in terms of adopting automation and these types of technologies, but the ways in which we've seen it used are through optical character recognition, which is quite a traditional means by which machine learning has been applied. We've used it at our organisation for reading documents from Bloomberg, for example, to identify changes to their pricing approaches. And then from a classification standpoint, using it in the context of our corporate actions team, actually. So we've used classifications to help drive portfolio management decisions on the back of corporate action and making corporate actions and making elections associated with them. And then look, on the generative AI piece, I'm not going to spoil what the panel I know are going to be discussing in terms of their use cases, but it's all about new content generation. It's about outcomes that aren't necessarily based in fact. Whereas on the in the previous, I've mentioned it's all based on historic data and can be proven or traced back to an original data point. And I think, apart from not spoiling the surprise, what generative AI is doing is generating new content. It's new data instances is how I would term it. So information that perhaps has never even existed before, which is, again, quite different. So those are my two definitions and how I've seen them be applied.
Great, and today actually is a very auspicious day for us to be having this panel, because today is actually ChatGPT's first birthday. It was only released this day last year, and it changed the entire world in just a year. So, you know, it has been a crazy year in the AI space. Jack, I'd ask you, what practical uses are you seeing for AI in the funds industry? What use cases are you seeing in the work you're doing?
Yeah, sure, thanks. Barry, is that working okay?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So just to sort of highlight where I sit in the sort of the value chain, I suppose, I think myself and Shani actually coming from a service provider perspective. So we're seeing, well, certainly Citi, we're seeing the use cases for AI across the value chain. So whether it's touching the sort of source data that we're using to feed our processes, doing something called intelligent document processing, so leveraging optical character recognition, as Maria mentioned, so OCR, as we like to call it, Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
There we go. To take the plethora of data that our clients need and when we need to be able to support them to extract those documents, to extract the right data points from them, to be able to automatically interpret them and understand that maybe this document provider or the source of this document uses millions of dollars rather than thousands of dollars, and be able to intelligently pass that information into our processing. That's building that data foundation. It's been really, really effective, we found, and we're looking at a lot of use cases there in terms of how we can feed our downstream processes. As we sort of move through the value chain, we see and we're exploring use cases around how we can use various types of AI to automate our processing of trade instructions, for example, from a middle office perspective. Obviously, our clients want to be able to instruct us in various different ways, not always in a structured way. To be able to draw together that fragmented data, unstructured data, and feed it into our systems for efficient processing is really powerful. And then we also see the potential for providing value add to our clients, the investment managers, to be able to proactively manage risk rather than potentially be reactive, to understand actually from a predictive analytics perspective, based on data we've seen in the past, how do we know when a trade might fail or whether a settlement might fail or whether there might be something that needs a bit more attention, and therefore we can make their lives smoother, easier, and potentially enable value add for them in terms of being able to get better transparency into what's going on under the hood. So all sorts of use cases across the value chain, and I think we're seeing it really starting to add value.
Yeah, and I really think it is something that is massively adding value, and I think an experience maybe you all might have is that as soon as somebody uses it, they realize, oh, we can't afford not to use it, which is why the proofs of concept from a lot of the technology companies are so valuable. And Shani, I mean, what are you seeing in your day-to-day work in terms of practical uses?
Yeah, so we are implementing AI, and we are preparing the future of generative AI, but really the focus being more on where it's relevant and is adding value. So it's not about doing a lot, or it's more about what counts. And we are also looking around the technology and the controls because we want to implement that in a safe way, because respecting regulation and cyber constraint, which is inherent to our industry, is absolutely key. So that's what we keep in mind. AI, as we were saying, is giving a structure to unstructured data. And if we take it from here, the application in that field is very unlimited, because with structured data, you can automate more, and you can do some processing. You can add to that cross information, you can recognize pattern, and it is very complementary to the human intelligence. So this is really where we see the value of that implementation. So now more practically, of course, we are implementing, as I was saying, a lot of use case. We have around 500 today. In the securities services area, it's pretty much around enhanced workflow, customer knowledge, risk and compliance. So just to give a practical example, it's about automatic fund prospectus reading, compliance rules creations, for example. Also reconciliation of fee schedules data versus accounting system, very practical, but that helps. The content generation of RFPs, just to bring a better, accurate and efficiency internally as well. We also, you were saying, there are a lot of other applications in the value chain, but we also would like to implement more of the sentiment analysis around our client query management tool. So extracting the data from the transaction and the discussion we're having with our clients to understand their behavior and their exchanges. And finally, we also implement chatbot automation with Noah, which is really specifically trained for security services internally. And it's implemented on the custody mostly, but we are expanding. And this is really helping our client navigate it through their settlement, cash, and all the market information that we have. And then we can provide them in a more accurate and quickly.
Great. And Maria, you're on the other side of the business then. I mean, are you seeing similar areas where there's practical uses, or are there really esoteric kind of specific use cases for your side that you might like to talk about?
It's a fair question to ask, and Shani's almost taken half of the other types of options that we've looked at, but luckily I've got a slightly different list here. Can I just get a quick sense, though, have we got sort of private markets and public markets in the room? So people doing public funds and private. So a bit of both, right? So look, I maybe focus a bit on the private side, which is quite nuanced, so cover both spaces. In the private space, I guess one of the biggest challenges that we face is in valuing our investments, right? So you'll be surprised to hear that we're actually using generative AI to what I would call create synthetic data to represent the value of our positions. So really interesting kind of slant on how we're using generative AI. We're doing a lot of as to what my peers here have just articulated, but also I guess rendering fund prospectus summaries that we publish and we have to publish by law on our website. regulatory rule interpretation. I'm sure the word regulatory is everyone's favourite in this room, but we're using it to help summarise documentation that we all know has got a ton of legalese in it that's quite difficult to digest. But also we're taking it a step further, so we're trying to identify or train models so that, based on historic implementations like MiFID and such, to actually identify the impact of the reg, which I think, again, is a bit more commercial than just summarising it. And I guess last but not least, we work on the commercial side with our sales teams to actually do a lot of lead generation, so taking a ton of market data and identifying information about individuals. A point I'd raise about that is just the ton of compliance that goes around governing information that's associated with people, which I might come on to a bit later. But yeah, really sort of nuanced use cases to support our business. Hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what we're seeing as well is that AI is really pervading all areas of the business. And certainly in terms of the work we're doing in William Fry, when we're working with organizations, is AI isn't necessarily falling within one part of the company. We're seeing responsibility for AI fall under legal, compliance, risk, data protection is happening quite a bit, and obviously the technology function. So what happens a lot is that you go to these meetings and you have all of these people there pointing at, you know, maybe the lawyers addressing the risks and saying, see, we need a budget for this. So, you know, with that in mind, and, you know, budgets is something that needs to be considered as AI becomes more embedded and things like that. Who do you consider to be your main stakeholders, be it customers, internal stakeholders, when it comes to AI, and what are their concerns? What are they asking you about AI?
I don't mind going first. I think just given that I mentioned the risk angle, I think you mentioned risk as well. I made a list of all my risk stakeholders here. I'm not going to list them all, but I've got three kind of key ones at least. Technology risk, model risk, embedded risk, and many more risk teams. The tech risk teams are probably sort of up high up on the list. They're the ones who are controlling access to the platforms that host our models. They're also controlling access to our data. They're also providing us with the ability to query data from different parts of our business while acknowledging info barriers. So where we're trying to cross-sell products across our organization. So that's kind of critical, and that's an area for us that they're a key stakeholder for us. Model risk, unsurprising, reliability, how have we tested, how are we making sure that the model is still working, how are we ensuring that we're not predicting outcomes that are going to be less beneficial, let's say, from an investor standpoint. So they're critical, and actually that area, I would say, is probably the one that's most on a learning curve, because I don't think we've seen the accidents happen yet that we might have done in a traditional sort of predictive ML type state. And then lastly, embedded risk, I would sort of classify simply as your sort of control function. How do you manage exceptions? How do you workflow? How do you know when a human decision is needed versus not? How do you automate, you know, flows? How do you, all those questions that kind of come up where you do need the human intervention. So the risk for me is the key one.
And Shani, I'll ask you, yeah. I mean, what are you seeing in terms of stakeholders and having to address colleagues' concerns?
A bit of everybody, because we are a bank and our biggest asset is trust. So AI and more broadly new technology benefits can be ripped off easily if we cannot control the outcome, the output of that technology. So for us, it's absolutely key. So obviously implementing those new technology and AI is coming with challenging, and the ensuring ethical, I mean, you mentioned a couple of them, ethical usage, maintenance, data privacy, managing potential bias in the generated content. So that's really something that we care about. So I believe that all these those risks are new, and they need to be managed as a bank. To really to adapt. So at the end of the day, it's a bit of everybody, and for us, it's really the approach is not straightforward. It's a risk-based and pragmatic approach that we want to make sure that we implement those technology with a regulatory compliance and a respect of ethical standards. I think that's really the key, and managing all the stakeholders as the clients.
To follow up on that, I mean, there's so many existing regulations that banks and funds need to comply with, and AI is already feeding into those and feeding into your regulatory obligations.
Yes.
How are you finding being able to maintain your regulatory obligations while incorporating these radical new technologies?
We are very careful. about what we can do, what we cannot. We are testing, and if we are not comfortable, if we have a risk about that trust, we don't do it. So that's maybe you have a...
But yeah, very similar. So yeah. Not to make this all about risk, because that's, I'm sure, everyone's favorite topic. But establishing those guardrails is really important. Mm. I think being able to build, and we've been working on this for years now, is how can we establish good guardrails, good governance, so that we can be confident implementing AI do so in a way that we know isn't going to erode that trust that Shani mentioned, which is so important for all financial services businesses. So those governance stakeholders internally are really key. But then just to look on a bit more sort of a positive side, I guess, the stakeholders who can benefit from the use of AI. And that's goes right the way from investors. So we're looking at use cases in terms of how we can improve the investor onboarding process for our fund manager clients. So how can we better interpret the documents that our investors provide us to get to real structured data around their identity and their behaviors, and really provide a better control environment and a better experience from a shop window perspective. And then, again, to Maria's point, there's so many use cases in the front office as well. So I think the private assets piece is really, really interesting, because there's such a swathe of fragmentation and unstructured data in that sort of part of the industry, and so much opportunity to really get some insights and transparency into what's going on under the hood, under the bonnet. So you look at really infrequently priced assets, for example. Is there a way, and we know there is a way because we're seeing fintechs do this already, is there a way to take two data points, two prices, for example, that may be a month apart, and then based on all the other data we see in the industry, how can we interpolate data points in between those? How can we forecast what the price or real value of this asset or this fund might be partway through that period? So, and that's really important. That's really valuable for investors, for investment managers across the front office. Lots and lots of stakeholders.
Yeah.
And maybe just to add on, I think it's fair also to say that it's new, and you need to invest a lot in the understanding, so on the expertise and the people who understand that new technology, together with the experts who knows the business and understand how they can bring the values, and not like going with crazy ideas that then put at risk, or it's not coming back to the risk, sorry, but jeopardize a little bit the implementation. So I think investing in that community of the two worlds is absolutely key, and this is what we're trying to do, so have like a melting of those two technologies and experts, or let's say people who are on the ground today, because you have at the end of the day to merge and to integrate those technology in legacy systems. I mean, we're not going to change overnight our technology, so we need to and integrate those, so it's
it's a balance again.
It's a balance, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point as well. It's so important to engage with experts prolifically, often external ones. So I think that's a really important part as well, and something that we're finding is that you're not always going to have the internal expertise, so finding those new channels of communication is important. And Jack's right. I mean, when we talk about AI, particularly in a fund setting and in a conservative environment, we tend to be a little bit more risk focused as opposed to focusing on the positives. But I think all of us up here are very much AI cheerleaders, but in a cautious way, and that's the right way to go about it. So certainly, I feel the future is bright. There's only been a year of real generative AI, as we've seen with ChatGPT, and we're scratching the surface. So we have a long future ahead of us, guys. I'd like to ask you, where do you see the future of AI in the funds industry? Maria, would you have any thoughts?
Yeah, sure. I think if you read the article in the Financial Times, I think a couple of days ago, there's a dreadful lot of fear mongering about how it's going to replace all of our jobs. I rather hope that's not going to happen. Look, I think there's actually a slightly interesting dynamic when it comes to AI in the context of our industry, specifically for funds, that's funds related, is that actually the funds world traditionally is still operating traditionally, and that's me putting it gently. When you think about our prospectuses, those are all generated very manually. They're generated with lots of legal dialogue, lots of back and forth between your external counsel, etc. I think actually what AI is going to do is not necessarily move us into a mode whereby all our jobs are replaced. I think it's going to move us more into a mode where we want to automate more of that. and then hopefully get to a point in perhaps a few years' time where we're talking in the generative space. So that's one thing I've started to notice, that people are a bit more willing to absorb just basic automation, like having a workflow on your process, as opposed to then going down the route of starting to generate prospectuses. And look, I think just drawing a little bit on some of the examples that the others have given as well, there are pockets and areas of our organisations that are painful. Our rolling review process, our ability to prioritise tasks, our ability to, let's say, get through the new product review process, I'm sure we all have this in our organisations. I think there are aspects of those that we will start to solve incrementally. And so I think it's going to be quite a long journey, personally. We've got, in our organisation, about 25% of our use cases have AI potential. We're managing a book of work of around 500 or so projects. And I think that gives you a sense of moving in the right direction. I hope then in a, you know, 2 or 3 years' time at least, we're talking about 50-75% where we're working towards those sort of incremental builds to help support our organisation do things more diligently, more effectively, but without taking away from what we stand for and the principles we stand for within the industry itself. So it's kind of the direction.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to address. And what about you, Jack? What do you see as the future on your side of the business?
So I think what would be great in the future is if and when we can get to the point, and we've established the guardrails as an industry and as a society, that we can get to the point where we stop thinking about a technology and start thinking about the business impact and the implementation of it. So rather than focusing on AI or to go off topic a little bit, things like blockchain and digital assets, actually, what is the overall business solution, the business benefit that we can drive from these sort of fourth industrial revolution technologies, rather than spending all the time at the moment as we are in trying to establish those guardrails, understand how we can do this responsibly. And that's really important, but hopefully in the future we can get to the point where it becomes embedded in the way we work, and to speak to Maria's point about replacing people, I think certainly at Citi we don't see this as replacing our people, we see it as augmenting them. I think my boss often uses the analogy of putting the cape on Superman, so really freeing them up away from sort of relatively mundane tasks and actually to be able to focus on value add, which is definitely where we see this going in the future. And we're starting to see some of that now. So I think when we start to look at combining all these new technologies, so AI, blockchain, digital assets, cloud computing, etc., I think in the future we may get to a point where actually things like the daily pricing requirements for a fund are no longer needed. We can be sufficiently efficient and confident in the data we have and the processes we have, that we could do things like intraday NAVs, intraday pricing, intraday liquidity, and not have this sort of batch type processing that we have at the moment. But we'll see.
Yeah, and I think Jack has touched on a really important point as well, is that I don't think at any point in human history there's been such an intersection of so many concurrent advanced emerging technologies. We're dealing with not just AI, but I mean the amount of data we're producing. An interesting statistic is by 2025, every 15 minutes we'll be producing as much data as all of human civilization did up until the year 2003. So we're seeing blockchain, big data, AI, quantum computing is starting to come online. So, you know, it's all happening all together all at once. So, Shani, what do you see as being the future?
Yeah, so I foresee as well a dynamic evolution for several reasons. First, the integration of AI will deepen, and we will shift toward explainable AI, the XAI. The XAI bring emphasize transparency and understanding the decision process behind the AI generated outcome. So that will bring new added value to the AI. And secondly, I would say that as AI will gain momentum, given the extreme sensitivity of the subject today, and we talk about cyber risk, data leakage, bias, lack of source control, etc., that will slowly diminish. And thanks to XAI, for example, and the control focus. So that will be the trend that will push and accelerate the AI dynamic, I believe, and we will enter more and more into delivering customer experience, added value. We mentioned already a couple. I think in terms of operational efficiency as back offices, we will become we'll maybe move from a cost center to a service, added service center, which is not always the way we are seen today. And finally, that will bring efficiency and a better risk and compliance management functions. So with the data analysis, we know how much AML KYC could be a burden. So that will help definitely. All the administrative activities will be eased. So that's to bring value. And at the end of the day, we can refocus employee time to a higher value-added activities, and even for the well-being, I think, of our employees, just to, you know, to believe that they are not machines, but you are using the human intelligence to complete the technology.
And you know what? I think that is a great note on which to finish, because AI is a tool that's enhancing us. Tool is the operative word, and it's going to become part of every part of our lives, very much part of this industry. And there's a clip some of you might have seen on the internet of people on a morning talk show, and I think it was 1996 or 1997, talking about the World Wide Web and what's an email and all of this explanation. And I do feel in 20 years' time, if there's a clip of panels like this, we're going to look at it and look back at ourselves as if we were talking about surfing on the World Wide Web, the way we've talked about AI in such early stages. But the future is really bright, and it's really exciting. So if you could join me in thanking our wonderful panelists, Shani Venon, Jack White, and Maria Knight. Thank you.